I mentioned over the last couple of days that my family spent 2 weeks in Camp Simcha, and over the 2 weeks that we were there, we had a lot of very difficult and very interesting shilas that came up. And I have to be honest, many of the shilas that came up are not just areas of halacha that I didn't know, but areas of halacha that I've never even looked at. So one of those shilas that was very complicated and difficult for me was regarding cooking on Shabbos for a chola sheyesh bo sakana. So what happened? There's a girl in camp who is on active chemo. Unfortunately, she's very sick. And one of her side effects from the treatment that she's getting is that she has a constant issue of terrible nausea. She has horrible indigestion. She has queasiness all the time. And she at times is very limited to foods that she's able to eat that will make her feel comfortable. Now, she needs to eat food, and we have to figure out what we can possibly give her that will be able to give her the nutrients that she needs. Now, this is a complicated issue, and I was approached on a Shabbos morning about the fact that this girl felt very uncomfortable with all the food that was being served. She couldn't take any of it in, and they wanted to know, are they allowed to make something for her on Shabbos? So the story goes as follows. The Gemara in Baba Kama, as well as in Maseches Chulin, it's a Gemara in Maseches Ksubas, and in Gittin, it's a Gemara that's mentioned in a number of places, all quotes the same passage of the Tosefta, where the Tosefta talks about Hamavashel B'Shabbos, if somebody, not for the purposes of one who's sick, somebody who cooks on Shabbos, knowingly that they were not allowed to, either B'Shogig or B'Mezid, the Gemara says, we make a knas, we penalize that person for doing something like that, and the Gemara discusses exactly the parameters of how far that penalty goes. How much do we knas you? Do we only knas you, the one who did the activity, the prohibited act? Do we knas other people as well and say, well, because a malacha was done and that's the only way this happened, therefore nobody's allowed to have any benefit from this food? That's the question that the Gemara discusses. Now the Rishonim have a discussion there as well. What exactly is the reason why we make a penalty here? So Rashi says the reason why we penalize one who cooks on Shabbos is because we don't want anyone to derive any benefit from an Aveira that was done. So since you went ahead and cooked on Shabbos when you had no reason to and no heter to cook, therefore, says Rashi, we don't want anyone to benefit from a malacha that was done on Shabbos, and we're going to penalize that food item and say that it cannot be eaten by anyone or cannot be eaten by the person himself, whatever the parameters of that halacha are. But that's the understanding of Rashi. And the Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam says no. The reason why we penalize is because Chayshin on Shema Yomerlo, we're concerned if we're going to allow you to eat this food that was cooked on Shabbos, so the next Shabbos is going to come around. You're not going to remember that it was only a mistake that happened last week that somebody cooked and we allowed you to eat it. You're going to say, oh, that was great. We had nice hot cooked food on Shabbos, fresh right out of the freezer. We cooked it up. It tasted wonderful. And therefore, next week, maybe you're going to make a mistake and make an extension that is something that you're not really supposed to be doing and ask the person directly to make the food item for you. And therefore, says the Rambam, that's why we're concerned. So the Rambam writes, and therefore there would be a difference between a Jew who cooks on Shabbos and a non-Jew who cooks on Shabbos. When you have a non-Jew who cooks on Shabbos, says the Rambam, that food you're not allowed to derive any benefit from because we're concerned that next week you're going to ask the non-Jew to cook for you outright, directly, and that's something you're not allowed to do. However, says the Rambam, what happens if a Jew inadvertently cooks on Shabbos? He makes a mistake, he doesn't remember, he cooks on Shabbos, and now the Rambam says, we don't have to penalize you and say you cannot eat the food because you would never go to a Jew next week and ask the Jew to cook for you. That's not something you would ever do on a Shabbos. You know that the Jew is not allowed to cook, and therefore, says the Rambam, you wouldn't be allowed to ask the non-Jew next week, and you know that you wouldn't ask the non-Jew next week, and therefore, he says, there's no reason to have the penalty there. Whereas, according to Rashi's understanding, you would penalize equally a Jew and a non-Jew who cooked on Shabbos because, after all, the problem is that we don't want you to derive any benefit from a malacha that was performed on Shabbos. So that's a major distinction between the Rambam and Rashi, and in fact the Shulchan Aruch adopts the opinion of the Rambam, which is that we only penalize when a non-Jew cooks the food, we don't penalize when a Jew cooks the food, because there is no concern that maybe next time around you're going to ask him again, because you know that a Jew is not allowed to cook on Shabbos. Now this is something that applies not only to cooking on Shabbos, but the Shulchan Aruch assumes it applies to all malachas on Shabbos. So if somebody violates a different malacha on Shabbos, we penalize them as well. Now there, it's a little bit harder to draw the line by other malachas. How do we figure out what the penalty should be? So take, for example, the Achronim discuss, what do you do about somebody who does laundry on Shabbos? So you're not allowed to do the laundry. So now what are we going to tell you? You can never wear that shirt again? Can never wear that article of clothing again? Maybe we'll penalize you just for the next week, for the next month? How long should the penalty be? Maybe it should be a penalty until the next time it gets dirty and now you wash it again? So that's something that's very unclear. How exactly do we define? Or, for example, the Achronim discuss as well. What do you do in a case where somebody does the malach of tofer on Shabbos? You sew something you weren't allowed to sew on Shabbos. So you go ahead, you're sewing away. What are we going to tell you? How should we penalize you? Tell you you have to rip it again and now sew it again? Is that the way to undo what you did? Or should we assume that now that article of clothing is forbidden forever? So it's hard to gauge exactly what we're going to tell you with regard to the guidelines of that penalty when it comes to other malachos, but this is something that the Achronim do discuss. So all that we've spoken about so far is when you have a prohibited activity performed on Shabbos, a malacha that is done on Shabbos that was not allowed to be done. Obviously, for the purposes of a chole b'Shabbos, obviously for the purposes of one who is a chole sheyesh bo sakana, certainly somebody who's on active chemo and is having all kinds of reactions, is certainly considered to be a chole sheyesh bo sakana. Their life is in tremendous danger, in tremendous jeopardy, and therefore we would permit food to be cooked on Shabbos if that's what is necessary. But there are a number of complications that come up when you have to find yourself in a situation like that, like I did. So the Gemara in Maseches Chulin talks about hamavashel lechole b'Shabbos. Now the Gemara says, let's change the case a little bit. Before we were talking about somebody who cooks on Shabbos for no reason, or because it's for themselves, but they weren't a chole at all, so they had no heter to cook. Now says the Gemara, what happens if you change the case and we're dealing with someone who is cooking for the purposes of a chole who actually needs it on Shabbos, so we have every right to do it, says the Gemara, what is the status of that food? So for example, you have one person who's sick in the house, and for that person we need to cook the food, but now there's leftover. There's a whole steak that we made, and now half of the steak is left over, so can somebody else eat the rest of it? Or do you assume perhaps no? So the Gemara gets into a discussion, a whole complicated discussion, and finally in the end it comes to the following conclusion. Amar Abdibi Minaharda. If you have somebody who cooks food on Shabbos for the purposes of a chole, you're not allowed to have a healthy person eat the leftovers, or eat anything that was made for the purposes of that chole on Shabbos. Even though the chole ate whatever they needed and now they're finished eating, you're not allowed to have a healthy person eat anything else that was made for the purposes of that chole. Why? Says the Gemara, because we're concerned that maybe you're going to add in something extra for the healthy people. So what's the story? I'm allowed to, let's say, cook a chicken soup on Shabbos because that's what the chole really wants and that's what they feel will put them at ease and will make them healthy. So you're allowed to do it if it's the type of chole that warrants such a response. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. But the concern is now we have a whole family of people. Everybody would assume that some chicken soup would be nice. So why don't we just add in a little bit more once we're turning the fire on anyway? So the Gemara says, no, that's not permissible. And because we're concerned that you're going to add on for the other people, therefore we say whenever you do a malacha for a chola on Shabbos, no one else is allowed to derive benefit from that malacha, and it's only supposed to be limited to the chola him or herself. But you cannot have other people eating the leftovers. So that was number one. The first thing that I told him was, even if we're going to allow it, and we figure out how to cook properly for the chola on Shabbos, none of the counselors are allowed to partake in that which was going to be cooked for the purposes of the chola. You're not allowed to eat the leftovers, even though it's delicious and it's fresh and it's beautiful and it's Onik Shabbos and Kavod Shabbos. But since the Gemara says we're concerned, maybe you're going to add in for somebody who's healthy, therefore we would assume that that's not permissible to eat the leftovers. So that's number one. And that's the way the Shulchan Aruch Paskin and the Siman Shin Yud Ches. So far, so good. However, what? So the Gemara discusses that as well. How long should we assume that that prohibition lasts? And I think the assumption is that after Shabbos is over, as long as you wait b'chdei sheyasu, as long as you wait enough time that you would have been able to make such a steak, so then it's permissible. But here comes the complication. So here's the problem. Here I was Shabbos morning. I was presented with this question. Here was the problem. Obviously, whenever you need to perform a malacha on Shabbos and you have a heter to perform a malacha for the purposes of a chola or whatever it might be, we try to limit the amount of Chil Shabbos to the least amount of Chil Shabbos that's necessary, without, obviously, compromising the health of the chole. So, let's say you have somebody who needs to go to the hospital. You don't say, oh, wait another 10 minutes, we're going to get a namzu to drive you to the hospital. A woman's in active labor, you don't wait another 10 minutes. You take her immediately. That's a chole b'Shabbos. You have somebody who absolutely needs to go to the hospital immediately on Shabbos. You don't say, oh, we're going to wait for somebody else. You do it yourself. You do it immediately. In fact, the Rambam says, Ayideh Agdolim. The leaders of the community should be the ones to show everyone that this is what we do. This is the way we respond. However, let's say you have a situation like this. So we have Jews and non-Jews working in the kitchen. So I can just as easily, it won't spend any more time if I have the non-Jew do the cooking as opposed to the Jew. And obviously that's a much lower level of malacha if the non-Jew cooks on Shabbos as opposed to the Jew doing the cooking himself. That's only an Isra Amir La'akum. And over here, I'm going to violate the Isra of cooking on Shabbos, which is a real malacha. So we would prefer, if there's no difference, we would prefer that the non-Jew should do the cooking as opposed to the Jew. Now here's the problem. We have an issue that is discussed by two contemporaries in the early 1200s. That was discussed by two very close friends, Rav Aaron Halevi, who was the Ra'ah, discusses it in his Sefer Betakabayis, and his Chavrusa, the Rashba, disagreed with him. So what happened? They were discussing this case. You have a Chole on Shabbos, who we need to cook for. But we're going to choose to have the non-Jew do the cooking as opposed to the Jew. Otherwise, why would we have the Jew do the Malacha if it's possible to do it with a non-Jew? So over here, the Ra'ah writes as follows. What about the consideration of Bishul Akum? How can you have the non-Jew cook? You're right. Maybe you're saving yourself from the fact that the Jew won't do the Malacha on Shabbos, but if the non-Jew cooks it, then the Chola can't eat it. So he says, what about that? What do you do about Bishul Akum? Well, says the Ra'ah, you don't have to worry about Bishul Akum. Why? Because what was the whole reason why we instituted Bishul Akum? Bishul Akum was because we're concerned. If you're going to start eating the food that's cooked by a non-Jew, you're going to love the food so much, and you're going to come back again and again and again, and then you're going to say, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we made a shidduch together and we became closer? This way we could always share meals together. So the Gemara says, Mishim Chasnus, because we're concerned one thing is going to lead to the next and the next and the next, therefore we say Bishul Akum doesn't apply. Says the Ra'ah, over here we're talking about extenuating circumstances. This is not the norm. You have a chola once in a blue moon on a Shabbos who needs something cooked for them, which is an unusual story. That's not going to lead to anything else, and therefore he says Bishul Akum never applied under these circumstances. You don't have to worry at all. So that consideration, he said, is out the window. Number two, he says, what about the fact that now that the non-Jew cooked in my kelim, now I have to go and kasher them? We generally assume if a non-Jew uses my pots and pans and they violate the Isser of Bishul Akum, so then I should have to go ahead and kasher the kelim, because now it's considered as if treif, even if they use kosher meat. But since Bishul Akum was violated on my pots and pans, you have to go ahead, we paskin, and kasher the kelim. So what about that? So says the Ra'ah, naturally, if you say there's no Bishul Akum here, then you don't have to kasher the kelim either. So those two issues are out of the way. And not only that, the Ra'ah says even a healthy person would be allowed to eat such food because there's no Isser involved in such a thing at all. There's no Isser involved. You're not going to ask the non-Jew to do more. And right after Shabbos is over, the healthy person would be allowed to eat it immediately. There's nothing wrong at all. And his Chavrusa, the Rashba, thought that this was absolutely wrong. Why? Said the Rashba, number one, you said there's no concern of Bishul Akum because this is such extenuating circumstances and you're not going to get close to him. He says, Adarabba, the opposite. Because the non-Jew is the only one who's able to cook on Shabbos under these circumstances, you're going to get closer to him because he's there for you when you can't do it yourself. So isn't that going to make you feel closer to the non-Jew? You're so happy that you have a friend who's a non-Jew who you can trust and rely on when you need him. So he says, isn't that going to make you feel like you're a closer friend? And next time something happens on Shabbos, you're going to run to help, to ask that non-Jew to help you again because he came in the clutch the last time. Says the Rashba, I'm more concerned about Bishul Akum on Shabbos than I am normally. He says it's still better to have the non-Jew do it as opposed to the Jew. And obviously the Chola is allowed to eat it because he's a Chola, so do whatever you want. But you can't have a healthy person eat such food. That's real Bishul Akum. That's real Bishul Akum, he says. And number two, he says, you're going to have to go and kasher the kelim after Shabbos is over because you had Bishul Akum that was cooked in your pots, your whole kitchen's treif. You got to go undo everything that he did. And not only is that food not permissible for anyone who's healthy after Shabbos, but also your kitchen is treif and the food is treif, and nothing can be done with that food because this is under the regular principles of Bishul Akum. Now, obviously, the Chola themselves is allowed to eat it, but everybody else, says the Rashba, is not allowed to. Now, this is the problem I was faced with. So here I am, Shabbos morning. The Chola needs food immediately. I have 35 seconds to figure out what are we doing. So I said, look, we have non-Jews in the kitchen. Machlok is the Ra'ah and the Rashba. So we'll worry about whether the kitchen's treif later. But right now, tell him to take a pot and cook for the Chola, who really needs the food. That's what I told him to do. And we'll figure out about the kitchen later. But that's what had to be done. How do we paskin la'alacha? Do we assume that the Ra'ah is correct? That everything is mutter here? Because after all, it's an unusual circumstance. And it's a Chola b'Shabbos. And it's never going to happen again. So therefore we would say there's no Bishul Akum that applies here. Or do you say maybe the Rashba is correct? The Rashba says here you have to worry more about Bishul Akum and more about the friendship and more about Chasnus than you otherwise would have. So the Ramah in Krakow, 1500s in Krakow in Poland, the Ramah paskins that we have the right to be Mekel like the opinion of the Ra'ah. And therefore the Ramah comes to the conclusion if you have a non-Jew who is obviously the one who's preferred to do the cooking on Shabbos as opposed to the Jew. So he says, if that's the circumstance, you don't have to worry, it's not Bishul Akum. And after Shabbos is over, healthy people are allowed to eat it as well. And all, therefore he says also that the pots are in treif and nothing to worry about at all, everything's kosher. That is the opinion of the Ramah, that's the opinion of the Magen Avram, who's also one of the foremost commentators on Shulchan Aruch. And the Shach and Yoredeh writes the same thing, which sounds like we're pretty free, we're pretty safe. However, when you look into the issue a little bit further, many, many prominent Achronim disagree with this psak of the Rama, and they feel that the Rama wasn't correct, and the Rama didn't see the Rashba. The Taz writes, if the Rama only saw the Rashba and saw the claim of the Rashba against his friend the Ra'ah, he never would have accepted the Lahakil opinion of the Ra'ah. And therefore, many of the later commentaries disagree with the psak of the Rama, and they say, this is the Taz and the Chayyadim and the Aruch HaShulchan, many prominent Achronim say that this was a mistake, and the psak really should be that if a non-Jew cooks the food for you on Shabbos, and he should be the one to cook as opposed to the Jew if necessary and if possible. However, they say that the food is going to be treif, and no healthy person is allowed to eat it. It's regular bishalakum, and the kelim are treif, and everything that normally would apply applies here as well. So what do you do when you have a situation like this, where you have the Rama, who's generally the bottom line halachic authority of Ashkenazic Jewry, and yet the later commentaries that came after him totally rejected what he said. So what's an Ashkenazic Jew supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? So you'll say, let's look in the most authoritative commentary on Shulchan Aruch, which is the Mishneh Berurah, Shulchan Aruch Arachayim. Let's see what he says. The problem is, you look in the Mishneh Berurah, in Siman Shin Yud Ches, he writes one thing. Siman Shin Chav Ches, 20 Simanim later, he says the other way. So this is a major problem. It's a big shiloh. What do you do? Should we assume that Bishulakim applies in a situation like this, where you need to have the food cooked by a non-Jew on Shabbos for the purposes of a Cholesh Yesh B'Sakana? Or do you say, perhaps, the whole issue of Bishulakim would not apply at all? This is a major issue. The Mishneh Berurah in one place writes that the Vilna Gaon said, with absolute certainty, we have a right to be Mekel, like the Rama said. No questions asked. There's no Bishulakim at all. Nothing to worry about. The Kelim are in Trev. Everything's fine. In the other place, the Mishneh Berurah seems to go in the opposite direction, so I don't know exactly how to be Machria, but it was a very interesting Shaila that, unfortunately, we had to deal with this summer, amongst many others that came up over those 2 weeks.